want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. You can catch all the latest of what's going on in Louisville, Kentucky, and around the world. Yes, we cover it all right here. Welcome to the MVM Radio Network, folks. And as always, it is our pleasure on Wednesday nights to introduce to you Mr. Dale the Truth. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, my friend. How are you?
You know, that's a good question. If I can ever find an answer to that question, I'll get with you. You know, I'm one of those people, man. I'm good right now, and I'm pissed later. I'm like a bad thermostat, man. You never know if I'm going to be hot or cold, so I never know how I am. Actually, I'm doing pretty good. It's been a crazy couple of days here, but it's pretty good. I tell you what. When you get adult kids, Dale, and I'll tell you this, man. When you get adult kids, your job as a parent never stops. You think it stops when they reach a certain age? Oh, no. And over the last couple of days, it's been pretty busy taking care of that stuff. But, you know, that's just the way it is.
I thought you were talking about Congress for a minute when you said adult kids.
There you go. No, actually, my daughter-in-law, bless her heart, she got that little rush hour freeze that hit real quick yesterday morning. It nailed her. She got in a minor fender bender. And then my son is coming home from work last night about 5 o'clock in the morning, and trying to get home to his wife, you know, and he goes to unlock his car. He stopped by Kroger to get some groceries, went to unlock his car, and his key broke off in the lock. the only key he had. So it's been kind of crazy trying to get her car, make sure her car's okay today, and make sure she's okay. And, you know, this been of the day trying to, you know, what's really rough is there really truly is hard to find an affordable way to get key repair done. And that sounds kind of strange, but it really is. I had to call locksmiths today. It's the first time I've dealt with locksmiths or keys in many, many years. And it was fascinating because if you go to get a key made anymore, they use these automatic machines now where you just plug them into a slot. Well, when you have a broken key, that's not an option. So then you call these locksmiths. Well, every one of them are mobile now, right? Well, we're mobile. We'll come to you. Great. What's your cost to make a key? Going to be about $125, $130 for a key, Dale. Not a smart key, not one of those coded keys, but one of those dumb keys that we used to have on all our cars before the government got involved and put computers in them. So, you know, it took forever. But I tell you what, I've got to give a free plug to these guys because they're fantastic. Uh-huh. A place called Phelps Hardware. There's one right out here off of Dixie Highway on Elsie Road, yeah, right next to the Target of Dixie. These guys still have people that can actually take a key and use the old grinder machine and actually make a key that works. And hats off to Tim over there, but Phelps did a fantastic job. And I tell you, if you want something done, man, go old school. That's the way it is. But that's how I've been. So, you know, long way of saying, you know, the way it works. There's a lot of people that should be doing pretty good today, though.
Yeah.
Republicans actually gained a seat in the House in a special election.
Yeah.
Apparently, everybody knows Reggie Thomas, has gone. Well, Suzanne Miles, Suzanne Miles took over the state seat to replace Democrat John Arnold. We'll get to Reggie in just a second. But John Arnold, as everybody knows, was a Democrat. He resigned in September. after staff members had been accusing him of sexually harassing them. Well, Suzanne Miles, Republican, actually took that seat, so that now the Democrats still hold the majority. But it's one of the closest majorities we've had in a lot of years, 54 to 46 majority in the House. And, of course, they've had a majority for 90 years, which ought to tell us a lot of the problems in Kentucky. Right, Dale?
I agree. I hope that the House Republicans in Kentucky, you know, have the common sense to be conservative if they take over, unlike the House Republicans in Congress in Washington.
Yeah, we're gonna get to that in a few minutes, but I know where you're going with that one. And you know, so it's interesting because what this does in 2014 and in midterm elections and stuff going on across country, what's going to be interesting is seeing if they can pick up five seats, because if the Republicans can pick up five House seats in Kentucky, it will be the first time in 90 years they've ever had a majority. So that's going to be interesting to watch. And Reggie Thomas, I mentioned him a minute ago, and I apologize for confusing you guys trying to call him John Arnold. Reggie Thomas is not John Arnold. But Reggie Thomas has made this another historic thing. He's the first it's the first time in our state history that the Senate actually has two black senators. Reggie Thomas won, and of course we all know who the other one is, right? Senator Gerald Neal. So,
yep.
You know, this is supposedly a big deal because Reggie Thomas is black, and now he's a senator who won. Is that a big deal today?
I don't think it's a big deal, but people still base everything on race. The same people who claim that it's all not about color, it's about content. When they know it's not about about the content of your character. They know that's BS because we have too many people worried about there's not enough blacks here, not enough blacks there, not enough women here, not enough gays there. So it's not a big deal to me.
And I don't think it's a big deal, period. We've talked about that so many times, about how really, it's truly a piss poor example of trying to help the black population, because when you continue to use this kind of a mindset, you continue to use this kind of a news report, if you will, acting like this is some big deal, you're continually telling the black person that they're not as good as the white person, and that's why we have to applaud you. It's like giving a kid a participation award in sports for not doing anything better, to me, but that's just me. What was interesting, though, is in the Suzanne Miles race and for the House seat, you know, that race was extremely close. The unofficial votes showed Miles had 3,548 votes, and her opponent, Humphreys, only had 3,436. But for those people who think that their votes don't matter, you know, you're only talking about a difference of a little bit over 100 votes. So, you know, for those who think their votes don't matter, that's pretty damn close in an election. Would you agree?
No, I agree. It's a testament to, like I said, you want smart, informed voters, and in special elections, not many people get out. We actually had two special elections in Kentucky on Tuesday.
Right, exactly. And what's interesting there as well, and I'm going to put this out, if we're going to make a big deal that a black person was elected to the Senate, giving us two black people on the Senate, like it's some kind of a huge, huge accomplishment here, well, let's remember, both of you had two special elections. One was a female, one was a black male. The guy elected. How far has America come, huh? God bless America. You really got to go down that road sometimes, because they don't make it a big deal when it's a female anymore, but it is still a big deal when it's a black person elected. But there were two special elections.
I try to tell you that if you didn't vote for Obama that you were a racist, and I try to remind them that was 2008,
right.
And I voted for a black man in the 1996 Republican primary for president by the name of Alan Keyes, and most mm-hmm. most of the socialist population, whatever name we want to attach to them du jour, they don't even know who Alan Keyes is. If I voted for a black man for president in 1996, I don't want a cookie for it. I mean, it's just, I voted for the best candidate. But again, they don't look at content of character. They look at color.
Well, and that's exactly it, because that's the whole bottom line. I continue to use terms that people would consider divisive or call me a racist, because I continue to say black this or black that. But there's a reason for that. If mainstream media is continue making the black person feel like they're inferior to the white people, we're going to continue pointing out the hypocrisy, so that hopefully the African-American community will rise above and realize that we're only equal if we choose to be and are held to the same standards. So I thought that was interesting. Stupid story of the week, Dale. You know, this overreaching police state. Yeah, only one. This is the worst one I've seen today, I'll tell you that. This is out of USA Today. A 6-year-old boy was suspended for sexual harassment after kissing a six-year-old girl's hand. At Lincoln School of Science and Technology in Cannon City, Colorado, Jennifer Saunders' six-year-old son was suspended for kissing a girl. So they forced this kid to miss school for several days and suspended him. But what's even more alarming is the fact that they used the term sexual harassment. So this school just told this six-year-old kid, go home and talk to mommy and daddy about sex. How overreaching?
No, it's overreaching. It was a public school, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that goes without saying it was a public school. But here's the thing, because we just brought up the whole demographic issue of females and minorities. Think about what would have happened if in that kid's school, maybe not elementary school, maybe if there was a school next door that was a high school or middle school, think if there was a female teacher at that same school who had a relationship with an underage boy. She'd be put on a paid vacation and the teacher's union would be defending her.
Well,
you see it all the time. If it's a good-looking female teacher, they'll get away with it.
Well, they don't necessarily get away with it in a lot of cases, but, you know, you're right. The unions go out
there.
They
get away with it in a lot of cases.
Well, they do get away with it a lot, but there's also a lot of them that go to jail, but it's really interesting.
The ones who should go to jail, and for them to say that to their kid, I mean, I guess he's got a life of crime, or maybe he's Bill Clinton in training. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing, and the superintendent, District Superintendent Robin Gouldy, I guess, actually is justifying the suspension. You know, it's saying that this is supposed to be this way because, you know, we have to stop, you know, unwanted touching. So if that's the language that this district superintendent is going to use, that a six-year-old boy was suspended because of a policy against unwanted touching of a six-year-old girl for kissing her on the hand, well, the girl happens to like the boy, too. She had no problem with it. So since they both liked each other, then we could tell six-year-olds that this wasn't unwanted touching. So you got a double standard, right? I mean, that's how ridiculous an argument we can go.
It's ridiculous. I guess they would have gotten away from it if it was like a sex ed class and they were teaching to put condoms on a banana that day. I guess then it would have been okay. I don't know.
Well, you know, or maybe, you know, God forbid, maybe it would have been, you know, 2 6-year-old boys. You know, sexual identity. That's a difference.
Yeah, I don't know how they would have handled that. I mean, we've seen that in many places where if there's some kind of homosexual thing. I mean, the bottom line is it's a government school. This is your government at work. If it happened in a private school, you could say, hey, let the buyer beware. If you don't want to be part of that school, you take your money somewhere else. But you can't do that in public schools, and especially in places like Kentucky where they don't allow competition because the teachers' unions are so strong and they strong-arm the government officials. If you didn't like what happened in a private school, you do like if you didn't like the restaurant that you went out to eat at last night, you don't go there again. But you can't do that with your public schools.
Well, that's exactly it. So there are so many things here, and it's sometimes you just want to grab people and strangle them. You really do. You know, now, of course, somebody here to show and say, oh, he threatened to kill a superintendent.
True.
No, that's not
true.
What I did at all. You know, but it really is interesting. I mean, you know, even psychologists, you know, Sandy Wertle, she's a child clinical psychologist who actually specializes in child sexual development and the prevention of childhood sexual abuse, says this is perfectly normal behavior for a six-year-old boy. You know, this is wrong to suspend him for this because this is normal behavior. Like, we needed a psychologist to tell us that. How many six-year-olds are playing doctor with their cousins?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, this is just totally crazy to me that we continue going down this road of a police state. Now we're accusing six-year-olds of sexual harassment for portraying typical six-year-old mentality. And I tell you, you know, and Paul is in the chat room. He says if this kid survives in a middle school, the public schools will likely provide him condoms. Go figure.
That's what I said. Yep. I mean, if it's in a middle school, I mean, we just explained this. If it was middle school, you're exactly right, Paul. That's what I said. There would have been a condom demonstration would have been allowed. If it would have been a high school, all he had to do was go out on a date with one of his female teachers, and it would have been okay.
Yep. Hey, it's just totally amazing to me we continue coming down this road. But I thought that was a story worth talking about and propping there, so we wanted to do that. And speaking of stories that need to be told, FoxNews.com. Here we go, folks. Here we go. We're going to the conservative site now. All right. They had an interesting story today talking about the Hollywood hypocrites. And they gave an interesting list, and I actually agree with them. They're talking about how a lot of Hollywood actors and actresses are hypocrites because they continue trying to act like it's a good thing to go down a socialist path and, you know, raise taxes and make everybody pay more and all this stuff. Of course, it's good to these millionaire Hollywood actors and actresses because when they were broke, they didn't think that way. Now if they got more money they can spend, everybody else should have to give up more because they don't have to do that anything anymore. But, you know, it's really disturbing because you look at actor-comedian Russell Brand. He talks about, you know, what a great thing a socialist would be because a socialist egalitarian system is based on a massive redistribution of wealth. He supports that. George Lucas, who didn't have a dime, the first Star Wars movie, he almost didn't get done because he was literally making daggone props out of cardboard because he didn't have money to do anything with. He's made a ton of money off the movie franchises, the Star Wars merchandise, but he doesn't believe in a capitalist democracy. Martin Sheen blames corporate America for all the problems. And yet, you know, you've got Martin Sheen out here making millions doing TV and movies. Even George Clooney. George Clooney is always one out there supporting Barack Obama and all of this crap. You know, and face facts, George Clooney's worth $100 million. You can be a socialist all you want to. That's the kind of double standard that we have. And the problem, and the reason I'm bringing this up is we're getting ready to get into a budget discussion. We're talking about Obamacare and stuff coming up as well. And when you look at all of these things in play, does Hollywood really have that much of an influence? I mean, those are some name brand people there that they continually go out publicly and trash democracy and free markets and corporations. You know,
I don't know if it's a problem because I think people should be allowed to vote with their pocketbooks, but they have influence because so many people will pay big money to watch their crappy movies. Or they used to pay big money to buy their albums, but I guess now they steal those on the internet. But, I mean, the best example, and I don't know if you were going to lead into this or not, but did you see the latest, that idiot hypocrite Kid Rock who's coming out against coal mining?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy, give him an award for the way that he's reinvented his crappy music for a couple of decades, but how many people like him and the country artists who are working with him against coal miners, how many of them got all their money from rural country people who worked in the coal mines, and now they're going to all of a sudden say they're against coal mining? So that's the hypocrites to me because they're literally biting the hand that feeds them. I mean, Kid Rock is out there working with them. We know he campaigned for neocons. We know now he's saying he's against coal mining, and if he's lucky, the Van Zandt family won't come kick his ass for stealing their songs and calling them his own.
Well, you know, it's interesting you come to that, too, because there's quite a few other things out there. I mean, Bon Jovi, the band Bon Jovi, of course, they support Obama. John Bon Jovi has a foundation that builds houses for poor people. So you're thinking to yourself, well, this is a guy who's giving back, right? He's doing community service, all these different things. But at tax time, no. At tax time, on his tax returns, he labels himself as a farmer. Talk about subsidies. He pays $100 in state property tax because he labels himself as a farmer who raises honeybees. I kid you not. So here's an ultra-rich guy who pays $100 in state property tax. Bruce Springsteen made his whole living standing up for the unionized blue-collar factory workers, right?
Uh-huh.
He's got hundreds of acres of land that he owns, and he don't pay any taxes either because he labels himself as an organic farmer, all right? And he runs a Hollywood campaign to save the earth. All this other jokey stuff. Leo DiCaprio, he's probably becoming one of the biggest socialist names out there. And he talks about how he flies around the world doing good for the environment. Now, think about that statement for a second. Flying around the world doing good for the environment. Wasn't it not so long ago with the global warming and all the other stuff where Al Gore was leaving a carbon footprint that was bigger than anybody in America? How is he saving the environment and helping the environment by flying in a jet all day? And, of course, then we've got Harrison Ford, you know, who likes to talk about how the earth feels when trees in a rainforest are cutting down. He knows what the earth feels like when trees in a rainforest are cut down because he just recently had his chest hair waxed, and the pain of that reminded him of how the earth feels when trees in a rainforest are cut down. Great environment, right? Chest hair and rainforest. I mean, this is the kind of garbage that we're subjected to.
Well, they've proven their hypocrisy, Ed, because this is something, when you just talked about flying around the world on their big jet planes, but then they claim that they, you know, drive an electric car if you try to put him on the spot. This is the kind of hypocrisy. They made it clear it's hypocrisy because look what you mentioned, Al Gore, the inventor of the internet and raping women in hotel rooms, and look what Al Gore did. He started this huge, huge industry of carbon credits. And this is something we were telling people to take back Kentucky probably 12, 13 years ago, and nobody knew what we were talking about. Again, they thought it was all a conspiracy. And we talked about this was going to come down where you can buy carbon credits. So basically you pay a bunch of money and you can say, look, I care more than you do because I pay for these credits. I mean, how's that any different than when you have in certain churches where they pay for annulments or they pay to forgive your sins or something? I mean, it's hypocrisy.
Well, you know, and let's be clear here, too, for people who don't really understand what we're talking about. Pollution credits, carbon footprint credits, anything you want to put a label on. You know, essentially, your government says this particular area is allowed to pollute this much.
Yep.
And they divvy up all these credits to all these companies that fall within that regional area. This is about as simple as I can make it. So if you have a company like McDonald's in this regional area, they've got 10 carbon footprint credits or 10 pollution credits every year that they're allowed to use. Well, McDonald's isn't going to produce any. They don't have any toxic waste or hazardous things going out. So then you put them next door to something like, say, I don't know, you know, a Roman Haas here in Louisville. That's a big name. Or put them next to a GE factory. Everybody knows GE. So you've got McDonald's next to GE. Well, GE is going to go and have 15, you know, credits that they're going to use, and they've got the same allotment McDonald's does. So they go to McDonald's Corporation, and they buy and pay McDonald's for the 10 credits, so they now they can have 25. You know, you're still getting the same amount of credits in the same regional area. But the interesting thing for me when it comes down to all of that stuff, because we've been doing it in Louisville for 20 years, but the interesting thing to me is if we have a problem with the carbon footprint, if we're having a problem with the environment, if we're having a problem with the ozone layer, and the government miraculously is smart enough to figure out exactly how much pollution is coming from each spot so they can divvy up credits for it, and they're not smart enough to figure out Obamacare. I mean,
if they were serious about these carbon credits, the question I would ask them, and they'll talk circles around and just talk babble and not really say anything, but how can carbon credits being purchased reduce emissions? How can buying a credit from Al Gore save the earth? It can't, but it makes them feel better. It's just like when they wear a ribbon on their shirt to say, look, I care more than you do. It's like we saw this, and you know, people get pissed off, but we see have a whole month of breast cancer. Everybody cares more than we do. So if we don't have a ribbon, then we hate breasts. I mean, I don't think so. I think you and I would agree we like breasts, but you know, that's what it comes to. If you don't wear a ribbon on your chest, you don't care as much as the next person. They just took this to the next level and made Al Gore a huge fortune for his big mansion down in Nashville.
Oh, sure. They paid him back for playing ball as the vice president. You know, I mean, it's essentially what it boils down to with our money, of course. You know, it's really interesting, though, because when you go down that road, by the way, Paul, good tidbit in the chat room. Paul is pointing out, we're talking about Harrison Ford equating chest hair to rainforest. Harrison Ford was born in Chicago. That actually explains a lot, Paul. It really does. But, you know, when we get into this, though, these guys think they're smart enough to save the environment and give us all these carbon footprint credits, pollution credits, whatever you want to call them. And here's a great example of how dumb they really are. You know, recently we talked about a backdoor deal that was made with Iran. You know about that. We decided to go ahead and unfreeze some assets and make some deals with these guys so they're going to get their nuclear technology. They've been working on it for a year behind the scenes with Valerie Jarrett taking the head, Muslim Brotherhood lover, you know. And Obama was so cocky about all of this that he actually went public and stood against Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister. You know, Netanyahu went public and said this was wrong, this was going to destroy things, and was really upset over it, over this so-called peace deal. Netanyahu said that Obama was wrong, was making a mistake. Obama said, hey, don't worry about it, it's just $7 billion. And went head-to-head with Netanyahu. Well, now we find out yet another lie. The deal, the assets and everything else that the U.S. agreed to give Iran and unfreeze and all the other stuff is actually about $21 billion. It's three times the cost of what he tried to lie to the American people about to sell us on this so-called peace deal with Iran. Shouldn't we be alarmed about this? We've already ignored everything else. Shouldn't we be alarmed about this?
No, he should be. I mean, definitely. We know that there was some congressional opposition. I just got done picking on Congress. There's a lot of things for which to pick on them. But there was some congressional opposition to this because this deal with Iran, it reached a critical tipping point. And as these details come out of the nuclear deal and become more clear, some congressmen got a little nervous and they started opposing it. So here comes the White House. They sell a deal that even their allies have called worrisome. Even some Democrats are admitting that they're worried about it. So the bottom line is this proves how much negative influence the lobbyists have on the lawmakers. And again, the speed and almost reckless haste of negotiations is an indication of the precarious nature of the president and his minions in terms of how far he's fallen in the polls and how desperate they are.
I tell you, it's really an indication of just how little power Barack Obama has. I mean, there's no doubt in most people's minds on both sides of the aisle that Barack Obama is nothing more than the figurehead puppet who reads the teleprompter as ordered by those such as Valerie Jarrett. But, you know, one of the most startling things about here, and you haven't heard mainstream talk about this either, is, you know, as we know, this has been going on behind the scenes for some time with Valerie Jarrett. I mean, even John Kerry was used in this whole situation, if you can believe that. But, you know, part of these secret back-channel deals that's been going on between Iran and the U.S., led by Valerie Jarrett, you know, led to this so-called peace thing. What nobody realized, and I didn't even realize it initially, part of this plan is basically a hostage swap. They're going to release prisoners on both sides of the equation. However, this is a real disturbing one. Iran's top nuclear scientist, Mojtaba Adarati, was arrested in 2011 and held here for working to get get military equipment that could be used for the Iranian military nuclear program. And he was one of the ones that was secretly released back in April as part of the plan. That was the good faith release. So we just gave Iran their nuclear scientists back. We just gave them $21 billion, and we just said, nothing to see here, folks. Look away.
And didn't they tell us for years that you can't negotiate with Iran?
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's what they told us for years. The Iranian leadership is too fanatical. They are not rational actors. They're not, quote-unquote, like us. They're not like good Americans. And we even heard that U.S. officials saying that the deception was part of their DNA. People got so pissed off at Reagan for calling the Soviet Union the evil empire, and I think communism was evil, so I think, as usual, Reagan was onto something. No one wanted to give him credit for it. But, again, we were told you can't negotiate with Iran. You can't negotiate with these terrorists, but the interventionists, the neocons, and the special interest groups who claimed for so long that if we negotiated or were diplomatic that would tantamount to surrender, then how do you explain this?
I'm in total agreement with you. And I tell you, it's interesting you mentioned Russia during the Reagan era, you know, because Russian communism fell, supposedly. We both know it's still there. It's just called a different name these days. They're not a true free market or a free republic. But communism supposedly failed in Russia. But how tight is Russia with Iran? How tight is Russia with China? You know, and if you pay attention to the news lately, Vladimir Putin has been trying to basically seize even more power and control, you know, as president of Russia. So, you know, there's a lot here that's being sold out, because the one thing they all have in common is they all have a strong Muslim presence, predominantly Muslims, you know, and we're not talking about Muslims who just leave us alone and let us get on our knees and lick our carpets every day. No, don't take that the wrong way, folks. No. We're talking about Muslims who want to get on their knees, load their guns, and take out Americans at all costs, and Christians and Jews and anybody else in their way. So this is pretty disturbing information, and yet nobody's making a big deal of it in mainstream. So we'll start the way. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to switch into stuff I know you want to talk about. We've got to get into this budget discussion or the lack of a budget.
Right.
And really, how bad did the Republicans sell out? And I know you're dying to get into that one, so we'll get into that when we get back. Folks, listen to the Ed Spencer Show right here on the BM Radio Network. As always, call in numbers 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys on a listening queue, hit that little number one on your dial pad, and we'll get you in as soon as possible. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Lock and load.
first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
And we are back, folks. I tell you, you know, you go to break sometimes and you sit here and you're listening to the music, checking out the ads, trying to get caught up on what's coming up on the show. You know, we don't just make these shows up. Well, no, you know, let's make this clear. Dale, Ed Martin, anybody else that comes into the show, they have no clue where I'm going.
Nope.
But it does take a lot of time and effort.
Sure.
To get everything together and set it up. So these guys are clueless by the time they get here, which makes for great conversation. But sometimes you get hung up in it, man. I'm looking at notes that I had from Monday night, and I'm like, what in the hell am I looking at here? So I apologize for a couple of seconds there. In the meantime, I tell you what's really fascinating is we continue to see Washington care about and sincerely work their butts off to ensure that if you're the incumbent, you keep your seat. But I don't know any other way to explain that when it comes to this so-called budget deal. You know, everybody is concerned. The incumbents are concerned about the 2014 midterm elections on both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat. And there's two reasons for that. One, the Obamacare debacle, and two, the lack of a budget. Well, today, Representative Paul Ryan, does that name sound familiar to anybody? And Democrat Patty Murray decided to put out a two-year budget that is supposed to be a great compromise that is going to keep us from having to worry about going into another so-called government shutdown on January the 15th. Needless to say, if this is the best that they could do, if Paul Ryan is supposed to be this great conservative economist, am I right about that, Dale?
No, he's not conservative. I mean, I was warning people back when Big Love Romney picked him as his running mate and talking about how he wasn't. People actually had the nerve to try to call him liberty-oriented. I'm having problems even mouthing the word libertarian, and people had the nerve to say something like that. I'm wondering if Paul Ryan is a descendant of Pierre Laval, the former vice president of France's Council of Ministers back in the 40s, because I'm not really shocked that he's surrendering again to the Democrats. And like you said, Patty Murray, he basically was outboxed by a former preschool teacher.
Yep, and that's what's really interesting. And I tease when I say Paul Ryan is this conservative, libertarian, whatever, because that's exactly right. They did try to portray him as this, and he's supposed to be this whiz kid with numbers and a great economist, but I haven't seen one thing. Even when he was running as a vice presidential candidate, the time prior to when he was running as a vice presidential candidate, and today, where he has shown me one inkling that, A, he understands numbers and economy, or, B, that he's conservative. And this deal is just another thing about that. Is another example
of that.
Well,
look at these names, Ed. I mean, look at these names. John Boehner, as you like to call him.
Mm-hmm.
Boehner.
Yep.
John Boehner. Eric Cantor. Good old Addison Mitchell, Jerome McConnell Jr. Look at these names. If Democrats got to choose the quote-unquote opposition leadership themselves, they could have come up with a better group than the ones that I just mentioned for the Republican Party.
Oh, I'm totally in agreement with you. Because, I mean, this budget, if you remember, we have what's called the Budget Control Act. Barack Obama asked for it. He was given it. It passed into law. So the budget is already set. It's supposed to have $91 billion in automatic spending cuts and everything else. What has Congress done? Well, you've got a Democratic Senate who refuses to abide by the law that they wanted passed just a mere 4 years ago and got, by the way. And you've got Republicans who are too scared to stand up. That's why they caved back in October during the so-called government shutdown. And for those of you who keep on thinking I'm talking about so-called government shutdown and wondering what that's all about, it's real simple. 87% of government was fully funded. The Social Security checks, the unemployment checks, the Medicare, everything was funded. The only thing that wasn't funded was the unnecessary, non-essential offices that the government themselves, the Democrats and Republicans, deemed as non-essential to government operations. That means 13% can be cut across the board, but that's neither here nor there right now. But essentially, this thing, they're trying to sell us as saying it's a $23 billion spending cut, which is far short of the $91 billion sequester that's already been agreed on that they're now trying to renege on. And the $23 billion isn't going to be saved up front. It's supposedly going to be saved on the back end on a 10-year deal. Explain this to me, Dale. I don't get it.
No, I mean, it's voodoo economics, if you will. It's fuzzy math, as some of the neocons have used that term in the past. You look at Boehner, and you look at what John Boehner said. Remember, he came out just today, I think, if it wasn't yesterday, I don't know when the story came out, where he was saying that if these conservatives don't like the budget deal, then they just don't understand it. They haven't read it. So he was basically attacking conservatives, and we shouldn't be surprised because he said that conservative reaction to the budget deal was ridiculous. That came out this morning. He said they're using our members and they're using the American people for their own goals. This is ridiculous. Well, how is it any different than what Boehner and his fascists do? Is that not the same thing they do?
I'm in total agreement with you.
I mean several key conservative groups are against this budget deal, and Boehner just sells us out. He shows us what he thinks about conservatives or Tea Partiers or whatever you want to call them. And we shouldn't be really that shocked and surprised by this. Look at Mitch McConnell. He said that he basically thought that Tea Partiers need to be punched in the nose.
Well, of course, now he says he's a big favorite of Tea Party. Did you see that article earlier today? You know, it's that's we've had that discussion so many times. It really is comical anymore.
I mean, is it any shock that Mitch McConnell is the patriarch of the Republican Party of Kentucky in Frankfort, where they got the headquarters with his name on it? Is it any shock that he's basically the false idol, the golden image of the Republican Party of Jefferson County, how they all bow down and worship him? They all think the same way.
Well, to a large degree, I've never disputed that, as you know. But actually, in Mitch McConnell's defense, if you will, he's already said he's going to vote no on this. This is ridiculous. Because, well, you know, this plan will not reduce the national debt. It won't reform the tax code. It's going to stop the sequester. The mandatory sequester that was put in place from the Budget Control Act is now gone. It's going to increase federal spending by about 5% above what the sequester was supposed to be for next year. So the sequester is essentially gone.
He said he'll vote against the budget deal, Ed, but you know he's doing that because he wants to pretend to be conservative because he's got a primary election. Let's just call a spade. He'll vote against the budget deal because he wants to look conservative. He needs to get busy packing and start taking things out of his office because somebody's going to beat him, whether it be in a primary or a general election. He's pandering. That's all he's doing. He can vote one way now and vote another way in about 3 or 4 years if he gets reelected.
Well, I don't disagree with you on pandering. If I'm not mistaken, that's how I started this conversation, that the only thing either side cares about is the midterm elections and covering their ass.
Yep.
So I can't argue with you on the merits of that.
If it's a sequester deal, it's his crowning achievement. I mean, the question I was going to ask you before the break, Ed, we just said, I don't disagree with you that Obama is a cheap, empty suit, but if Obama has so little power, why do the Republican, quote-unquote, leaders like Boehner and McConnell keep kissing his ass?
You know, that's the real question, because here's the deal. We both know that the Republicans control the House and the Democrats control the Senate.
So the Uniparty controls both.
Well, exactly. And that's exactly where I'm headed to this, because I think if you need proof that the Uniparty exists, there it is. Because it's clear that in this budget deal that they're going to be voting on probably by Friday in the House. I don't know when the Senate will get to it, but probably by Friday in the House, it's very clear that the Republicans, led by, you know, Paul Ryan, caved into Democrats on this and gave it up, and John Boehner is supporting it in full. So the Republicans don't have the strength of conviction in the House, even though they've got the majority power. And then you flip that to the Senate. The Senate Republicans are going to say, there's nothing we can do. Harry Reid won't let us. Now, they're right about a lot of those statements. I don't disagree with those statements. But, you know, you don't fight the fight you know you can win. You fight the fight that needs fighting. That's how wars are won. That's how the game is played. And it seems to me that the Republicans and the Senate only care about fighting the fight that they know they can win. So at the end of the day, if they're not willing to stand up for what's right and fight the fight that needs fighting, you're right. They're capitulating to the same old bullshit, which is why the Uniparty is alive and well. But we do have some that aren't like that.
Yep.
I mean, let's look at this. We've got Representative Jim Jordan in Ohio. He has already came out in public opposition to Ryan's deal. Republicans. These are Republicans I mentioned here, folks, so they're not buying the game either. Jordan said that he's in the no category. He said there are some positives to the agreement, okay, but nobody is addressing the concerns that the sequestration has on the actual defense budget. So he's angry because the sequester is screwed up. He's also angry because they had this big old retreat, if you remember, back in February, maybe January, in Williamsburg, Virginia. And in Williamsburg, Virginia, the Republican GOP had this big old thing, and they agreed 11 months ago that they were going to push conservative goals and things like that. We were going to, you know, get big savings in the mandatory programs and stuff like that was going to fix this budget and get us a balanced budget within 10 years. That was their goal. They all agreed on it. And this is the second time in a matter of a couple of months that they've sold out on it. What do you say about that?
Well, they're going to sell out. Like I said, I mean, with McConnell, you know, he views this sequester deal his crowning achievement. I've said it over and over in these airwaves. Harry Reid went and got the most expensive whore in the world with McConnell. He runs Nevada with an iron fist, the state where brothels are legal, not that there's anything wrong with that, and McConnell became his biggest, most expensive whore. He claims he's going to vote against a budget deal, and then Boehner, as I just said, slams conservatives and says that they're being ridiculous. McConnell is a master of the meaningless vote for show while backstabbing conservatives behind closed doors when it counts. Kentucky voters need to all wake up and realize what McConnell's about and not keep him enriching this enriched poser.
Well, but this right now, we're focusing on the House, though. We know what McConnell is. But when you talk about Jordan,
I said this on, I think I said this on my show last week, there's only about, and I'm not going to name them unless you wanted me to, but there's only about 12 members of the U.S. House who I have any respect for at all. And that number is subject to change as the days go by. The senators, there's even fewer. There's very few people. Like you mentioned Jordan. He is one of the ones. I'm looking at a list, actual list I have of the few House members who I respect. And Jordan is on there with our good friends Justin Amash and our very good friend Thomas Massey. So there's only about 12 subject to change at any time in the House that I have any respect for.
Well, and you've also got Tim Huelskamp out of Kansas.
He
opposes that deal because
we're picking everybody off of my list. How many can you name?
Well, he's against it because it's raising spending now and promising reduction later. We all know that's a farce. You look at Paul Labrador. He says the only thing he's undecided on is how harshly he's going to oppose it. He's a definite no, but he hasn't decided whether it's going to be a really strong no or just a no.
Yeah, he's posturing. If you look at his history, he's got record in the House, much like McConnell, where he goes back and forth depending on the way the wind's blowing.
Well, I agree with you, but he says he's a definite no. He just hasn't signed.
I mean, a lot more definite no's, but they say we're ridiculous if we don't agree with this. I mean, Paul Ryan's basically sitting there saying, you know, I'll gladly pay you some Marxism today for a spending cut next Wednesday. That's what he's like, Wimpy sitting there with Popeye, and that's what he's saying. He wants the big government now, and oh, we might get a spending cut later, but we're not going to. We're going to get more spending and more taxes.
Well, that's absolutely true. And Labrador actually basically said the same thing. He says this is a terrible plan. It sells out everything we agreed to in Williamsburg 11 months ago. He also goes on to say that it's making promises to the American people that are false. As we know, that's normal for the Democrats these days. Talk to anybody about Obamacare. That they're lying to the American people that we're going to save $25 billion in the out years. And remember, this is a 10-year goal they're talking about, even though it's a 2-year budget. You know, they're going to save $23 billion, and he says, we know that's a lie. Mick Mulvaney, South Carolina. You know, now this is...
These neocons, Ed, I'm even getting tired of calling them neocons, because to be honest, they're an embarrassment to even the father of neoconism, like Irwin Kristol. They're an embarrassment to him. I think what I'll do, I'll start this phrase here on your show tonight. You know how when we have these illegal aliens, what is the politically correct term that the Democrats call them, Ed?
Undocumented immigrants.
Yeah, so I think these neocons, we should start calling them undocumented Democrats.
I like it. I love it. Let's sell it. There you go. There you go. Let's make a list of the undocumented Democrats in the House and Senate. I like that a great deal. I really do. But, you know, this is the interesting thing to me, too, though, because that's why I wanted to bring out these names and tell you what they were saying, because I know you pay attention to who's selling out and who's not. But like Mulvaney, okay, you know, he's supposedly a Republican out of South Carolina, says he opposes the deal. But what's fascinating to me is he went on to suggest that the Democrats were taking advantage of Paul Ryan. Now, the Democrats are taking advantage of Paul Ryan. That is meant to imply that Paul Ryan is just this poor little kid who the adults are beating up.
Remember, they wanted you to put him a heartbeat away, as the cliche goes, from the White House, but they want you now to think he's so stupid that he's been duped.
Right, exactly. That's the whole thing I'm getting at. You know, and then he goes on saying that the other reason he's against it is he's worried that Paul Ryan is being overly optimistic about the Senate and how they're going to act on this going forward. You know, this is fascinating to me. And, of course, Mulvaney goes on to point out the BCA, the Budget Control Act, we've already pointed out. You know, so he's going on saying that Paul Ryan is basically being bullied. He's a poor child who can't defend himself. And then he's going on and saying that Paul Ryan is a good conservative later in his statement. You know, and then he's questioning how we're going to be any different in September of next year than we are right now if we don't go ahead and essentially go to another government shutdown January 5th if necessary. There's not going to be another shutdown because the Uniparty wants to keep their jobs. So I find this very interesting that these people, these sellouts, these turncoats like Mulvaney and a few others you've mentioned, are out here trying to act like they're selling something. But what's really startling is how much the American people are buying this. What do you think?
I agree. Like I said, there's a few who you can actually watch their lips move and think they're telling the truth. And like I said, I love our good friend Thomas Massie. We saw how hard the establishment Republican Party worked their asses off against him. We saw how the minions of Jeff Davis try to get out there work against him, from that guy who was the judge executive up in Northern Kentucky who tried to run, to Marcus Carey, who I know you're familiar with, who just ripped Thomas Massie nonstop for being constitutional. And Massie's one of the few that's going to tell it like it is. You mentioned Jim Jordan. He's one of them. Justin Amash is going to tell it like it is. Tim Holtz, can't be mentioned him. I think Tom McClintock of California can be believed. Joe Walsh of Illinois. There's a few of them out there. Paul Brown of Georgia. Jim Bridenstine of Oklahoma. But there's not many. This is a 435-seat legislature. And, you know, the neocons will tell you, well, you can't get anything passed unless you negotiate. Why do you negotiate with these people? I mean, if it's just going to lead to more socialism and they're going to defend these budget deals, which funds Obamacare for more years, why would you go along with that? I'd like to be a general contractor who performed a 2-year-long job contract as part of the Republican Party and then get retired every 2 years for the same job that never got done.
Well, see, and I totally agree with that, because if you look at the Budget Control Act, this was brought forth by Democrats. Barack Obama wanted it, asked for it. He was given it, in 2009, and as soon as it's set to go into play, oh, we can't have that now. So we're going to change the rules again and ignore the law that we sought, we agreed to, we enacted, and we're not going to do it. That's the Democrat side of it, okay? Then you look to Obamacare and look at everything that's going on there. If you have your plan, you can keep your plan. You can keep your doctor. Now we find out, of course, this has been lies forever. We also found out recently that a lot of the bigger name drugs that treat things such as MS, HIV, cancer, those things are excluded from the drug list, so you got to pay for those out of pocket, thousands of dollars. So people who need that medical care for serious medical needs, life-threatening diseases, aren't going to be able to get that. Those death panels Sarah Palin mentioned might be coming true after all, right? So we look at all of these things, and then we finally had the guts to say, okay, we're not going to cave the 1st of October, and the day before this so-called October 17th D-Day, if you will, the Republicans caved.
Yep.
How does anybody expect the socialist agenda or the liberal agenda, this liberal utopia that these clowns are out there trying to enforce, how do they expect that to stop when at the end of the day, every time they sit there and get into this holdout game, they win?
Well, they got reelected. Never had to about. Like I said, you look at Edison, Mitchell, Jerome, McConnell Jr., and you look at those kind of guys, they got re-elections to worry about. This agreement is aimed at averting the government shutdown, as we've talked about on this show, you and Mr. Martin kicking the can down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And all it's going to do is end their supposed cycle of crisis. And I bet you anything, I'd be willing to bet you, tomorrow is Thursday, I would be willing to bet you that they will get this House vote during the day sometime tomorrow. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Senate voted on it late tomorrow night and they all ran off to Christmas break.
It's possible. I know the House is supposed to vote on this no later than Friday, so I'm assuming
it'll
be tomorrow.
I bet you money they'll do it tomorrow, and you'll have a Senate session in the late night hours, and then they'll be adjourned for the holiday.
I wouldn't doubt that. I wouldn't doubt that at all. And that's the whole problem, though, because we continue coming to this. Nothing ever gets done. We continue kicking the can, as we talk about. And, you know, the Republicans keep wondering why. I mean, that's the whole thing. I'm a conservative. All right, you're a conservative.
Yep.
You know, we get that. You know, let's forget the Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Independent, blah, blah, blah. Forget all the titles. But conservative values are conservative values. What do we want? Conservative values are quite simple. You want freedom. You want a free market. You want liberty. It's not like there's that much to define what you are as a conservative. It doesn't matter what's behind your name. I have some Democrats that are friends of mine, that are conservatives. So I don't really have the title, but the Republicans and the Democrats have done a great job in the two-party system creating this division, and that's what destroys us. And I'm just having a real problem trying to understand how these fools think they're going to be able to sell this to the American people. They were just given the keys to the kingdom in the midterm elections next year. I firmly believe that until this budget announcement. I don't know. It could be me. We're running short on time. Dale, final thoughts, my friend.
Well, the show flies by. And again, when these Republicans did walk into the negotiations after claiming, here's the line, Democrats, don't cross it. Oh, I just moved the line. Oh, don't cross this line. And to capitulate everything to a mental midget like Murray should embarrass the hell out of them. But there is no shame. I can almost hear the way this went. Murray put tax increases on the table. Ryan supposedly objected. And Murray probably said, oh, we're going to have a government shutdown. And then they all started pissing their pants. McConnell probably peed in his Depends. And again, the bottom line is don't let these people think that their seats are safely in the bag in 11 months. Maybe they know they're not. Maybe that's why they're having to pee in their adult undergarments. But the bottom line is, as Ed just said, you can't worry about whether you're Republican or Democrat. You need to start over. You need to fire them all. You need to start from scratch. The bumper sticker says reelect nobody is never truer than it is today. You need to flip the Senate, let Boehner know we don't like him, remove him from power, wake up the voters to the death of the New World Order.
You know, it's well put. It constantly amazes me how people forget one basic thing when they're in power. Okay, for the average everyday citizen like me and you that live in a real world, we understand one concept. And it's a concept that I've preached to anybody and everybody. It's a concept I've raised my children on. But it's a real simple thing. People will only give you what you're willing to accept. If you're in a relationship where you're being abused and you continue going back to that abuser is going to give you what you just said was acceptable because you keep coming back. People will only give you what you're willing to accept. And that's kind of the harsh reality, and there's people out there that are going to take offense to that kind of an analogy. But let's face facts. We, the American people, are constantly abused by our so-called elected leaders. We have told these elected leaders that what they're doing is acceptable to us because we continue electing people for lifetime jobs, if you will, in the Senate. How many senators are in their 60s, 70s, 80s? How many senators have served more than three or four terms in the Senate? People will only give you what you're willing to accept. If they aren't doing their job, we've said that's okay. We're going to reelect you anyway. So, of course, they're going to continue abusing us. It's the same thing in the House. It's the same thing with the two-party system. When the Democrats say, give us the Budget Control Act, and we'll go ahead and abide by that, and the Republicans give it to them, and then they come back a couple of years later when it's supposed to go into effect and says, hey, we don't want it anymore. We're not going to abide by it anyway. And then you go and capitulate on another daggone budget that's not going to do one thing. Once again, the Republicans caved, and the Democrats have deemed this acceptable behavior. They know that they just have to wait them out. Even the L.A. Times, Los Angeles Times, folks, liberal paper if there ever was one, liberal city if there ever was one, even they don't have much good to say about this. They had an article out today that basically said that all the Murray-Ryan deal was going to do is split the difference between the House and the Senate spending proposals, and they're going to call that a compromise. But the reality is that the main thing that they wanted to do was avoid another government shutdown on January the 15th, because this bill is not going to reduce the national debt, even though both parties say that's what they want. It's not going to reform the tax code. It's not going to fix Obamacare. It's not going to end everything that it should have ended. We've got problems here because we are willing to accept these substandard types of behavior from the people that we elect to office. And until we get our head out of our butt and realize that we, the abused, have now become the abusers by allowing this mindset to continue, we'll continue going down the path of least resistance, and we will never get back the America that our forefathers gave us. That's just my opinion. Do with it what you will. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, Dale the Truth will be here with his own unique brand of the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show. What's on the agenda, man?
Well, I think we're going to have to talk about the technological wing of the New World Order, and that is twofold. Number one, we're going to talk about the Facebook, you know, the same Facebook who is the right hand of the New World Order. And we're going to talk about why did Facebook's Political Action Committee give Mitch McConnell more money than even allowed by law, number one. And then number two, on the flip side of that, we'll talk about Google and the disturbing story that's out. Google wants microphones in your homes and microchips in your head. And sadly, there are lots of smartphone-addicted zombies out there who will see this as technological progress. Well, that's tomorrow night. Facebook in bed with Mitch McConnell, and Google wants microphones in your ceiling.
That's going to be an interesting show. That's it for tonight, folks. Don't forget Dale tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show, and our good friend Kim Mulman on Sunday night at 7 o'clock with his own brand of Liberty Unbridled. In the meantime, that's it for me this week. You guys have a great week, and we'll talk to you on Monday. Take care.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. Erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.